about freeing ourselves from mental habits. And there isn't an essential Trump. There isn't an essential Matt Gaetz. I definitely think there's a political dimension to Buddhism, right? I definitely think that's true. And I think people say, no, don't bring politics into the Zendo. It's like too late. There already is. It's not democratic politics or Republican politics, but, you know, in Buddhism, everybody is responsible for the whole world, you know, actually. You know, you're responsible for the whole world. You can't, if there is no essential self, you can't say, well, my concern is just me and my family, or me and the people I care about. You know, that's really not, from a Buddhist standpoint, even a possible solution. Because there aren't isolated individuals. We're all together in this system. We're all together in this system, right? So you can kill all the bad guys, but the system persists, right? And how do you change the system? And you do all kinds of things. You can contribute to political positions you support, and so on and so on. But really, I believe deeply that it all comes back down to these mental habits, right? And if it's a system, not a person, then that makes it sound, in a way, overwhelming, but it's not. Because, you know, you just start working on the system that you can work on, and that's what we call yourself, right? So when you sit down on the cushion and you begin to work through your own energy habits, right? You really and truly are making the world a better place. You really, and in fact, if people don't do this, it's not going to be a better place, you know? If you look at somebody like, you know, Robert Kennedy is an interesting person because I've been following his career for 40 years. You know, and he actually was somebody who made a name for himself in conservation, believe it or not, like in environmental conservation. He was a real champion early. You know, it's like you look at somebody like this who started out with really good motivations, right? And really, you know, did some good things. He was a very interesting activist lawyer earlier in his life. And you think, how did he get from there to, you know, from this place to this place? And, you know, it's like people step by step create a toxic mental world, right? They get tangled up in these destructive energy habits, right? I mean, I saw this with my father. You know, my father grew up during the Depression in, you know, Newark, New Jersey. And my family suffered a lot from the Depression, you know, really hit my family very hard. My father, you know, his sort of ticket out of Newark was service in the military. And, you know, went to college, it did all these things for him. And, you know, my father started out with really good motivations. You know, he really wanted to make the world a better place. And by the end of his life, in places like Vietnam, he did things that were really, really against the law. And, you know, really terrible. And it's like, here, you know, my father was not, was a monster, but not a monster. You know what I mean? He did things that could have led to his imprisonment in Vietnam, really. But on the other hand, you know, I remember him as being sometimes a loving father. You know, you think, how can this be? How, if we say, well, there's an essential person, right? He was just a rotten apple, right? Just a bad guy. Well, he was a bad guy, but he wasn't always a bad guy. It's like, how did he do that to himself? And it's like one step at a time, right? It's like you get a little darker every day. It's like your energy field gets a little darker every day. You make one sort of micro move and then you're a little darker, and then you cultivate anger, you cultivate hatred, you cultivate fear. You don't intentionally do it, but you wind up doing it, right? And it turns you into a monster, right? So, you know, the Buddha said the baseline human being is almost a monster. So when people say, oh, well, you know, basically humans are good, I kind of think, yes, they all possess this intrinsic Buddha nature, which is pure compassion. But we have to work on it. If we don't work on it, it doesn't manifest naturally. If it did, the world would be a very different place. You know, it's naive to think that people who do a lot of destructive things are evil in their own heads. They're not. People do bad things, they think, for really good reasons a lot of the time. And, you know, maybe like my father, they look back and realize they made a mistake, right? But while they're doing it, they think, I'm a crusader for goodness, right? I mean, even the British officers who shot people in India when India was trying to escape from the British Empire, you know, basically they thought they were defending civilization, right? So, basically, if we want a compassionate world, we have to work on rebuilding ourselves, you know, undoing our destructive energy habits, and, you know, basically purifying our energy field, right? And, you know, the Buddhist teaching is that when we do that, we become brighter and brighter, not darker and darker. You begin manifesting this intrinsic wisdom more and more naturally, automatically, and consistently all the time. But it's not easy. It's actually challenging, you know. To become a Buddha is very difficult, you know. It takes many lifetimes, according to the teachings. But to be like an awakened person motivated by compassion takes many hours of practice, right? That's what it takes to be a good person, many hours of practice, right? To clarify, you know, a body, because even though we don't realize it, right, we have all of this destructive conditioning. We carry it around no matter who you are. You know, we all have, you may not want to kill somebody, but we all have like mental habits, energy habits that are destructive, that we can't see, that, you know, they are not visible to us. So a lot of our mental practice is what you could call like deconditioning. We're not really aware of our conditioning, but a lot of meditative practice is what you could call deconditioning. You know, most people understand that language can't be trusted. Like Buddhism is always saying, you know, you can't trust words. So if you say somebody is a bad guy, that makes sense in the English language. You could say, oh, Trump is a bad man. But as I've just said, there really isn't such a thing as a man, right, a person. That doesn't really exist. People are assemblies of energy habits, basically. That's what people are. So language is not trustworthy, right? You can't trust language. You know, language says good guy, bad guy. So we know language is not trustworthy. And we know culture isn't trustworthy. You know, a lot of our culture in America is really toxic, actually. But you know, even your immediate experience is not entirely natural, believe it or not. Right? Even your immediate experience. Experience is also karmic, right? So you know, we might say, okay, language can't be trusted, culture can't be trusted, but experience can be trusted, our immediate experience, but actually that's not true. So for example, you get up one day and you might go outside and look at a cloudless sky and feel dread. Yeah, that happens to people, you know. And then on another day, you get up and you look at the cloudless sky and you feel, oh, how beautiful, how wonderful, right? So, you know, experience is also filtered through our energy habits. It's also filtered, right? So you know, if you're at a, you know, you can have a holiday, whatever your holiday might be. It could be Christmas, it could be Hanukkah, it could be something, it could be Diwali, right? And you can have 10 people in the room and 3 of them are depressed and 4 of them are ecstatically happy and somebody else is bored. It's the same experience, but they're... So look, when we meditate, we're undoing all of these energy habits, right? So even the way we experience reality is karmically created. So we want to free... let's undo all of these energy habits. There's a koan where a Zen master just holds up an object, like an apple. It's not an apple, but he says, what is this? We say it's an apple. But actually, you know, our experience of the apple is already filtered through all of our energy habits, right? So you know, when we meditate, we sit down on the cushion, it's like every time you go into emptiness, it's like you're undoing, you begin to undo these energy habits, and you may not even be aware of them at first, right? I will give somebody a koan, no beard. There's a koan that's, you know, Bodhidharma, the monk who brought Zen to China, is always depicted with a bald head, an earring in his ear, and a beard. Right? So the koan says something like this: why does the Western barbarian have no beard? That's the koan. So Bodhidharma is the Western, he came from India, that's the West, he's not Chinese, so he's a barbarian. Why does the Western barbarian have no beard? And you know, if you meditate on that koan, it's really about our invisible karma, right? It's really about our invisible karma. You know, basically, if you ask somebody, do you have any problems today? They mostly will say, no, all is good. You know, when I look inside, I don't see any obstacles. My heart is full of love. You know, Trump probably looks in his heart and thinks it's full of love. You know. But, you know, when you begin to say no beard in deep samadhi, all of a sudden, you know, something comes up. You know, it may be a sense of loss that you've been carrying around for 30 years. Or, you know, anger, you know, or something else. You know, in other words, you know, we all have a beard, but we deny it. We all have a beard, but we deny it, right? And nobody likes to notice they have a beard. In fact, we have many beards, right, as we discover in our Zen training. So you know, you give somebody a koan and no beard and they laugh and go, oh, this is going to be fun, and they sit down and for a long time nothing happens, but finally they begin to realize, you know, I've been carrying around this sadness for a long time. Why am I sad, you know? And then they realize, oh, I've been sad for a long time, you know? Now, this is what liberation is all about, right? This is real liberation. You know, you can take somebody out of prison, and that's a good thing, but, you know, taking the prison out of the person is much more complicated affair, right? And we don't necessarily realize it, but we're all a little bit locked up. We're all a little bit in prison. We just don't know it or how it's so, right? If we weren't, we would be Buddhas, right? We would be compassionate, awakened beings all the time. So you know, you work on this koan, and little by little, something comes up that you haven't been able to confront, or you've tucked it away long ago. Maybe that's how you got through things at a challenging point in your life, but it's still there. It's like pretty much everything is in there. And, you know, when you become aware of your obstacle, your energy habit, and you sit with it in emptiness, it begins to like unspool. It's like you think of it as like a eddy in the water, right? That's caught. You know, water's flowing, and a bunch of rocks will catch the stream, and it begins to spin around in a circle. That's like an energy habit, right? And the koan sort of like basically allows that to flow free. So it sort of unwinds, unspools, and starts flowing freely. And it's, people feel great after meditation a lot of the time, especially after sesshin. It's like, at the end of sesshin, it's like you start unwinding some of those energy habits, and suddenly you have more energy, actually. Because we spend so much time, it's so draining, hiding all this stuff from ourselves, you know, and keeping the lid on ourselves, that when you start undoing these destructive patterns, you start having more and more energy. You feel better, you feel freer, younger, etc., etc. So, you know, when we look at somebody like Mr. Trump, you know, you're looking at somebody who's, and I'm not saying this with a sense of superiority, because actually, you know, we all have, we're not all quite like Trump, fortunately, you know, but we all have some of those characteristics, right? And I'm not excusing him. I think he should be in jail, right? But all the same, people in jail are also just like us. They have these destructive energy habits, and they haven't figured out how to work them through. So, you know, he's quite an ensemble of destructive energy habits, many of which have to do with fear, right? I mean, he's such a fearful person. This whole thing about losers and I'm always winning is all about terror, about he's terrified of being a failure in life. This is so obvious, right? And of course, if you read anything about him, his father absolutely drilled into his head that he mustn't be a failure, you know, and that everybody else was a failure, you know, he must be a success. So he's definitely driven by the ghost of his father into this terrible place, right? So, you know, I can't imagine where I would be without Zen. You know, I definitely had my own, carrying around my own monsters inside myself. And I definitely had many energy habits that needed to be unspooled. It's, you know, it's a work of a lifetime, actually, you know. I mean, some of these are so deeply ingrained, it's very difficult to, but you just keep working at it, right? And every time you work through a barrier, you begin to feel better, right? Not doing the work is so much worse. It's so much harder than doing the work, really, you know. Every time you break through a barrier in yourself, you feel more alive and more connected, more trusting. And, you know, when you live without those things, life is really challenging and unpleasant a lot of the time. You become a monster, but everything becomes monstrous, right? So, you know, we're all trying to liberate the bodhisattva of compassion in ourselves. And, you know, we do it one obstacle at a time. And we, like, transform our most elemental ways of experiencing the world, really and truly. You know, I've told this story before, but, you know, so many times after sesshin, I've experienced like the world, just the most immediate world in a radically different way. I remember, you know, years ago when we were just starting the Cold Mountain Sangha, we used to have sesshin at my house in Plainfield. And at that time there would be like five participants or something. So the five people at sesshin all got in their cars and drove off. And I heard this sound and it was so beautiful. We'd been meditating for, I think, 5 days or 6 days. I heard this sound. It was just so beautiful. The mind that labels things and names things was turned off. And I was just like in the moment without all of these energy habits getting in the way. And I thought, what is that beautiful sound? I went around the corner, it was just a sprinkler. Somebody was sprinkling the grass. And I watched the water, it was like I could hear the water hit every blade of grass. You know, and I looked at the grass and it was like I could see every blade of grass. And you know, truthfully, every blade, it was like, this is my body. You know, this is me, this is who I am right now. And it was just such a beautiful, I remember years before going to a sesshin, and I was in the car with Webb Roshi. And he just had to go into the quick check, because we had a long drive back to Seattle from the sesshin. And he wanted to get a cup of coffee. So he went into like the quick check. And I turned on the radio, and there was just like some absolutely awful, like bubblegum music, you know, on the radio. It was like Beethoven. It's like, oh, that is so moving, you know. it was just like so beautiful. And I've had thousands of those experiences, right? It's just such a beautiful way to live. So, you know, the natural human being, we're in a difficult situation right now. But, you know, it reminds us, you know, it's naive to think, it's always, I think, rather selfish to think, I don't deserve to be living in this world. You know, this is such a screwed up world. You know, that's not a healthy attitude. This is myself. So I have to just get up and work on the world every day, cleaning it up. You know, I'm created by the same world that created Trump, right? We're karmically linked, whether I like it or not. This is the only existence that I can have. So to say, oh, I don't deserve Trump, is actually a very confused view, right? You know, this situation is our karma. This is our destiny. This is the only existence we can have. And to be a bodhisattva is to get to work, right? And you get to work in many ways, right? You know, clean up the environment, you know, try to help pass legislation that will provide opportunities for people who don't have opportunity. You know, we could go down the list. But you know, the fundamental work is to liberate ourselves, liberate our minds, bodies, and hearts every day. And you know, the challenges are the only way we can liberate ourselves, right? This is a challenging time, but this is what it means to be liberated, right? I mean, if enlightenment was only for good days, it wouldn't be much good, right? The universe, in the sutras, it says beginningless greed, anger, and delusion. When we recite the four great vows, you know, those vows that we will recite after the sutra, shujo, you know, what we say is greed, anger, and delusion have no beginning and no ending. The world will never work out its problems. The universe will always generate these problems. Greed, anger, and delusion are infinite, but we will not stop until they're transformed, right? So, you know, the four great vows are really like a serious vows. They say, you know, wisdom Buddha knowledge is infinite. I will learn it all, right? That's one of the things you promise. And you say greed, anger, and delusion are infinite. They will never end. They will never stop. But I will never stop dissolving those barriers, you know, life after lifetime. So that's a big job, but a beautiful job, right? So please don't say, I don't deserve Mr. Trump. It is a Batman. It's like the villains have taken over Gotham. But our job is, as soon as we say, you know, I hate Trump, they should shoot Trump, very confused, right? It's not Trump. It's these patterns, you know. Those patterns won't be dissolved if you can't free yourself from them. Somebody like Kennedy, you know, he started out as a good guy. He's trapped in these destructive energy habits, you know. That can befall all of us. if we don't clean up our karma, if we don't cultivate awakened mind. So please do it. It's so, so wonderful. Yunyan asked Dao, what does the Bodhisattva of great compassion do with so many hands and eyes? Dao said, it's like someone reaching back for the pillow at night, right? So, you know, when you clear away your karmic obstacles, acting from a compassionate place is just like adjusting your pillow, right? It's or reaching for your pillow. It's just absolutely natural. Caring for others is caring for myself. There's no question. Yunyan said, I understand. Dao would say, well, how do you understand? All over is, or the body is hands and eyes. Dao said, you said a lot there, but you got only 80%. Yunyan said, what about you, elder body, elder brother? Dao said, throughout the body is hands and eyes. So, you know, basically, when you liberate yourself, you're liberating your whole being, right? You're liberating your body, your heart, your mind, and when those things are liberated, they no longer exist in the same way you might imagine, right? You know, when you sit down on the, you know, imagine how you might have once thought of your body. You know, people look at themselves in the mirror and they say, oh my God, you know, I'm 7 years old, I'm flabby, I'm fat, I'm thin, you know, I have these pouches hanging off my body. What's that all about? Oh no, you know. What an unhealthy relationship, right, to the body, right? People look in the mirror and they hate their physical selves, you know. You sit down on the cushion and you enter deep samadhi. And think of the way you experience your body. It's like the boundary between yourself, your body and the world dissolves. You know, and you feel like you're infinite, extending infinitely out. The boundary's gone. You know, you have this expanse. This is real, right? This is the real body, not the body we look at in the mirror and think, oh God, how can this be, you know? This is the way Buddhas experience their bodies. You know, and you walk outside and you look at the tree and you think, I can't feel any difference between that tree and myself. That tree is your body. See, so you can say, oh no, the real body is the one I hate when I look in the mirror, but that is samsara. That's an illusion. That is not true. The real body is the body you experience on the cushion when, you know, basically the boundaries disappear and you realize you're infinite in all directions, see? That's the liberation of the body. You can liberate the eye, you can liberate the ear in exactly the same way. Verse, one whole, emptiness pervading, crystal clear on all sides. See, that's just what I just described. Crystal clear on all sides, formlessly, selflessly. Spring enters the pipes. Unstopped, unhindered, the moon traverses the sky, the pure jewel eyes, arms of virtues. All over the body, how does it compare to throughout the body being it? The liberated body is an energy field of light. The present hands and eyes reveal the whole works. The great function works in all ways. What is to do? Do it all. Do everything. Purify everything. Do everything.